As the weather gets warmer, many of us feel the urge to do healthier things like getting outside more, exercising more, and eating more nutritious foods. Vitamins are a major component of a healthy diet, but what does that actually mean in real terms? Well, today on Please Explain, we're going to talk about what vitamins are and what minerals are and where they come from and what they do for us. And joining us is Dr. Patsy Brennan, professor in the Department of Human Ecology at Cornell University. She served as a member of the Institute of Medicine, Food, and Nutrition Board and the Steering Committee for the International Vitamin D Standardization Program, and I'm very pleased to welcome her to this week's Please Explain. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. As always, we also invite our listeners to join in the discussion. Give us a call at 212-433-9692 or leave a question on our show page at WNYC.org. So, Dr. Brennan, what's the definition of a vitamin? What distinguishes vitamins from other nutrients?
So like other nutrients, vitamins are essential, which means that we either can't make enough of them or we don't make them at all. So we have to rely on our food or dietary supplements to get vitamins. What distinguishes a vitamin is chemical. Vitamins are compounds that have the carbon molecule in them. So that's technically a definition of vitamins, and there are 13 of them that we need. So there are quite a few of them.
And the minerals don't have carbon in them? Well, carbon is a mineral.
Carbon is an element, but minerals do not have carbon in them. They are also elements, and there are 17 of those that we know that we need.
Now, of those 13 vitamins, are some more important than others?
Well, they're all important because as a definition of an essential nutrient. If you don't have them, there will be adverse health consequences. I think many will sound familiar to your listeners, vitamins A and D and E and K, and then all of the B vitamins, as well as vitamin C. So there are deficiencies that occur in this country, particularly lots been learned about vitamin D deficiency and inadequacy in this country, and probably about 19% of Americans aren't getting enough vitamin D based on what we know about how much of the nutrient they need.
Well, do other mammals depend on the same 13 vitamins and 17 minerals?
Well, other mammals depend on many of those same vitamins. An example of a vitamin for humans that's not a vitamin for many mammals is vitamin C. In fact, humans and guinea pigs need vitamin C, but other mammals can actually make it, so it's not a nutrient for them. And of the minerals, most of those minerals are also needed by other mammals.
Now, you mentioned vitamin D. It's been in the news lately. I read that we have vitamin D receptors throughout our body, so it must be essential to many aspects of the functioning of our nervous system and the rest of our bodies. Just what are the basics of vitamin D?
So we've been learning a lot more about what vitamin D does, and probably everyone has heard that vitamin D is important for healthy bones, and that's certainly true. It helps us absorb calcium, and it helps the bones form. But now we know vitamin D, as you said, functions in many cells throughout the body. It's involved in regulating how cells divide. It's involved in cell functions, including the ability of cells to process and regulate genes, a wide variety of genes. It's involved in immune function, and we're learning much more about that. So the functions of vitamin D are being explored, and there's a lot of excitement about that.
I've also heard that vitamin D influences mood.
Well, there's a lot of interest in what vitamin D might do, and there are a lot of headlines for vitamin D. So one of the things that's happening with vitamin D that's intriguing is the kind of studies that are coming out that find that low levels of vitamin D are associated with some biological function. And you mentioned mood. That's one of them. But interestingly enough, many of those associations are quite controversial. The evidence is not yet as strong as we'd like it to be able to say definitively that vitamin D plays a major role in mood.
Well,
and many other functions.
One of my producers was told by her doctor that a vitamin D level was too low and that if she didn't increase her the levels, her body would start depleting its calcium. Well, she eats and drinks dairy products, spends a fair amount of time outdoors. Why would her D level still be low?
So this is a very good question, and in part, this represents the controversy. We actually don't have consensus among the scientists on what the blood level should be. So some people are being told that their levels are quite low based on an expectation that the amount of the circulating form of vitamin D in their blood, which is known as 25-hydroxy-D, should be above 30 nanograms per ml. And yet other evidence suggests that as long as it's above 20 nanograms per ml, that that's meeting the needs. So there's this controversy right now. And among scientists, there are calls now for us to have some consensus developed around the evidence as to how much vitamin D is enough and how much is too little.
And doesn't it change with variations in weight and body size and whether you're male or female and whether you're older? Because osteoporosis, isn't that connected with a lack of vitamin D?
You're absolutely right that we need enough vitamin D to maintain bone health. And in fact, we have new dietary reference intakes, which are the recommended amount of vitamin D that Americans should be consuming on a daily basis. And those are based on bone health. And some of the evidence for how much vitamin D we need came from studies in preventing osteoporosis. So it's very important. It is true also that individuals that are obese have lower circulating levels of vitamin D. We're not entirely sure why. There's some thought that the vitamin D is being stored in body fat because vitamin D is one of those fat-soluble vitamins, so that's a possibility. You're also correct that vitamin D fluctuates with the season, and that's because vitamin D is unique among the vitamins in that we can make vitamin D in our skin when our skin is exposed to the sunlight, and we can also consume vitamin D from our food. So in the summer, when people are getting some sun exposure, their vitamin D levels are actually about 30% higher in their blood than they are in the winter. So vitamin D is one of those unique vitamins.
Is vitamin D the only vitamin that we also manufacture?
Well, it's the only one that we as humans manufacture. What's interesting is vitamin K, because the bacteria in our lower intestine can actually make vitamin K. And it's controversial how much of that vitamin K that those bacteria are making on a daily basis is actually absorbed into our body.
My guess
Otherwise, the vitamins have to come from our diet.
My guest is Dr. Patsy Brannon, professor in the Department of Human Ecology at Cornell University. We're talking about vitamins and minerals on today's Please Explain. Invite your calls at 212-433-9692, or you can leave a question on our show page at WNYC.org. I've always wondered about vitamin K. We have A, B, C, D, E, and then suddenly we jump to K. What happened to F, G, H, I, J?
I don't know what happened to those, but I can tell you how vitamin K came to be called K. And it's because when it was discovered because vitamin K plays a role in the coagulation of our blood. And coagulation in German starts with a K.
Ah.
So it was called vitamin K.
I thought it had something to do with kryptonite. But
what don't we wish?
We have a caller who wants to know a little more about vitamin D. Shelley, hi, you're on the air. Shelley from West Orange, New Jersey.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I would like to know a little bit more about the relationship between vitamin D and muscle spasms and lack of sunlight. And if one goes through a very cloudy week like we had last week, can that then result in muscle spasms, and does one then need vitamin D supplements? Will that make a difference?
Well, let's get to the supplements later, okay, because that's a very controversial area. But right now, we're talking about the various vitamins, and we'll go through some of the others, and then we'll talk about supplements. But, okay, does she need should she take more milk, for example?
Well, so and you asked me about what if it's a cloudy week. Probably a week isn't going to make that much difference in the level of vitamin D in your blood because it takes a little while to adjust. Vitamin D has been hypothesized to play a role in muscle cell function. There's some evidence to support that, but it's not, again, as strong evidence as we would like. There's not a lot of evidence that taking vitamin D would affect muscle spasms. So what are some good sources of vitamin D in your diet? Fatty fish, salmon, tuna, sardines. Milk is fortified with vitamin D. The fortified cereals have vitamin D in them. And there are, of course, fortified juices now. The other surprising source of vitamin D is mushrooms that have been irradiated with UV light, and they're actually a pretty good source of vitamin D.
Now, I'm wondering about vitamin D in milk, and then in orange juice it says calcium. Can we see them as being the same thing in those cases? Why would it be vitamin D in milk and calcium in orange juice?
So calcium can also be fortified in juices. Calcium's naturally present in milk. So in milk, we fortify milk with vitamin D, and there's naturally present calcium. And it makes sense from a biological point of view to think about fortifying a food or having a food with calcium and vitamin D because their roles are so linked in terms of bone health. And so there are juices that are fortified with calcium and also fortified with vitamin D.
But they're not the same thing.
They're not the same thing. Calcium's a mineral. It's one of the major minerals in the body, and in fact, it's the predominant mineral in bone.
Now, you keep on saying we don't know about this and we don't know about that. We've been studying vitamins for a long time. Why don't we know more, and why do we keep on getting different amounts, as you suggested with D, recommended for maintaining our health?
A great question, and in part, I think it reflects the fact that it's hard sometimes to study vitamins because we have vitamins coming in from our diet. If we have observational studies, these are studies where they look at what somebody's chosen to do, and you'll often hear that low vitamin D has been associated with an increased risk for this particular disease or that particular disorder. So that's an observational study, as opposed to a randomized clinical trial where we actually randomize people to placebo or vitamin D supplements. And that randomized clinical trial gives us stronger evidence. So why is it controversial? Well, I'm going to go to vitamin E, which is a great example. Vitamin E, the observational studies all suggested that vitamin E was associated with reduced risk of cardiovascular disease. Then there were several very large, well-done randomized clinical trials, and guess what? No effect of vitamin E whatsoever on cardiovascular disease. So we can sometimes, from an observational study, see an association, but it might not be a direct cause and effect, and it's not till we get to the randomized clinical trials that we can sort out that difference. So, and sometimes we have conflicting evidence, which is the case for vitamin D. Many studies say that vitamin D is associated, low vitamin D levels are associated with a increased risk for cancers. Other studies say there's no relationship. Some studies say that, in fact, low vitamin D levels might actually be associated with a decreased risk for some cancers. So I think the nature of science is such that when we haven't fully understood the vitamin, it can be difficult to sort it out from the evidence.
Well, how are these vitamin levels measured? Is it usually through a blood test?
Well, it depends, again, on the vitamin. So for vitamin D, it is a blood test. There is a metabolite of vitamin D, which is 25-hydroxy D, and that's actually measured in the blood.
So if I go to a doctor right after I've had a glass of milk, will I have a different test reaction than result than if I go and have my blood test many hours after I've had some dairy product and haven't been outdoors very much?
So the issue with 25-hydroxy-D is it's a metabolite. So the vitamin D that you make in your skin and the vitamin D that you eat in your food first has to go to your liver. And then your liver is going to process it and make 25-hydroxy-D. So 25-hydroxy-D is actually a very good measure that will fluctuate with season, and it may fluctuate as your intake increases over time. But on an hour-to-hour basis or between meals, it doesn't fluctuate very much.
David on the Upper West Side asks if there's a different absorption of different types of vitamin D, such as D2, D3, and dry vitamin D.
Okay, so dry vitamin D is going to be a crystalline form of vitamin D, and it'll be either D2 or D3. And the body, once you eat it, is going to handle it as it would D2 or D3. So the evidence right now is that the absorption of D2 and D3 looks like it's probably quite similar. There's controversy, though, about how long vitamin D stays in the blood versus vitamin D2. And the controversy comes because the studies have been done differently. So the studies that have been done looking at similar amounts of vitamin D2 and D3 that would be approximately what you could consume from foods are probably handled about the same. But when you eat very high amounts, which can happen sometimes with a prescription from the doctor or deciding to take supplements, that D2 may actually leave the bloodstream a little faster than D3 does. But again, this is one of those issues where we're still sorting it out. What's of interest, though, is if you're treating vitamin D deficiency like rickets, either vitamin D2 or vitamin D3 is equally effective in treating rickets, the frank vitamin D deficiency.
We're talking about vitamins and minerals on today's Please Explain. Inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. You can leave a question on our show page at WNYC.org. And our guest is Dr. Patsy Brannan, professor in the Department of Human Ecology at Cornell University. She served as a member of the Institute of Medicine Food and Nutrition Board and the Steering Committee for International Vitamin D Standardization Program. And we will continue this conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Dr. Patsy Brannan, professor in the Department of Human Ecology at Cornell University. And Dr. Brannan, we've been getting a lot of calls on supplements. We have gotten into a bit of a debate in the past on this show because we've had a couple of people come on, who science writers and another scientist, who have said that supplements are really not all that worthwhile unless you have a serious deficiency, and that often you're really just wasting your money when you use supplements. Listeners then get furious and claim that these people are just mouthpieces for big pharma, and they're trying to force us to do other things and to spend money on other things. What is your take on the use of supplements? When and how often?
So I think the issue of supplements is a very interesting issue. We do have evidence that supplements do improve the intakes of Americans for a number of vitamins, including vitamin D and vitamin A, vitamin C, and vitamin E, as well as some minerals like calcium. However, I think many people think that more is better and that if they take more supplements, they'll get health benefits. There, the story is a bit different. So we have proven benefit of only a few supplements. One is the combination of calcium and vitamin D to improve bone health, which we've talked about. One is for folate to reduce neural tube defects in pregnant women. And one is for a combination of vitamin C and E with beta carotene, which is a pro-vitamin A, zinc, and copper. And that combination has been shown to delay macular degeneration progression in people who are at risk for severe macular degeneration. Beyond that, there's very little evidence that taking a supplement will actually have a beneficial effect on one's health. And there is evidence of harm.
Well, we can take too much, as you say, especially with vitamins like C. One doctor I went to said, just take fish oils. That's all you really need.
Well, fish oils are going to have vitamin D in them. They're also going to have omega-3 fatty acids, which are not a vitamin, but there's a lot of interest in omega-3 fatty acids in terms of their health benefits, and there's a lot of ongoing research with that as well.
So can we overdose on certain vitamins? I know the B vitamins are water-soluble, so you could probably eat as many as you want, swallow thousands of pills, and it won't really matter.
With the exception of vitamin B6, and the reason why we know about vitamin B6 is because people were swallowing very large amounts. And vitamin B6 at very, very high doses, 100 to 1,000 times what we need, will actually cause a peripheral neuropathy and make it hard to walk.
But what about some of the others? We were told in the past that if we took a lot of vitamin C, we could fight off cancer and colds. But you can take too much, can't you? And we had a science writer on the show who said that if you have an incipient cancer and you take vitamin C, it's just going to nourish the cancer, not fight it.
So that's an interesting controversy among scientists, and the research is still open. There's still a lot of interest in vitamin C, but the issue of how much and under what circumstances is not clear, and again, there's not proof of benefit. So one should be a little cautious about that. One should also be cautious about taking very high amounts of beta-carotene. There are studies that have shown in smokers that beta-carotene supplements at high doses actually increase the risk of lung cancer. And the most recent cautionary note is with vitamin E, where high doses of vitamin E supplementation actually increase the risk of prostate cancer in healthy men. So there is reason to be cautious about not taking too much.
And in the past, many years ago, we heard that vitamin E increased sexual potency. Then that disappeared. So we keep on hearing conflicting stories.
I know, it's confusing, isn't it?
And I'm afraid to read the science section of the New York Times.
Well, and you know, I think one of the things that one needs to be careful about is chasing the latest study. It's always a good idea to make sure that we actually have evidence from randomized clinical trials and that we have a couple of studies that have actually found the same thing. In the meantime, what do we recommend to people, which is get your vitamins from food? Why do we recommend that? Well, first of all, most vitamins come from fruits and vegetables whole grains. Those are very good sources. There are a few exceptions to that. But when you're eating fruits and vegetables and whole grains, you're getting other things like fiber and other bioactive compounds like antioxidants. So you're getting it in a mixture that really helps one have a healthy diet and meet those vitamin needs. On the other hand, about 40 to 50% of American adults take a supplement, and most frequently a multivitamin mineral supplement. So what I say to people is if you're going to choose to take a supplement, choose one that provides 100% of the daily value for the vitamins and minerals in the supplement. And that way, if you're getting everything you need in your diet and you're taking a multivitamin mineral supplement, you've got about 200% of what you need, and we have no evidence that vitamins are harmful at that level.
A listener left this question. There are many different types of manufacturing processes to make these supplements. Some lower-cost vitamins, such as the big-name brand Centrum, use lower-quality ingredients like calcium carbonate. Some higher-quality companies like New Chapter grow their own plants and make full-spectrum extracts. Has there ever been any testing between these two tiers of vitamins to determine their effectiveness?
There's been a lot of testing on the different forms of vitamins, and this gets into something that we call bioavailability, how well is a particular chemical form absorbed. So in some cases, like folic acid, which is a synthetic folate that's found in supplements, actually absorbed as well or better than the folate that is complex with proteins in foods. So it just depends on the particular nutrient.
Now, many years ago, we used to hear all about iron deficiency anemia and supplements like Sercitan and Geritol. Monty from the Bronx wants to know about the importance of iron as a mineral in the body.
So that's a very good question. And in fact, iron deficiency is one of the more common deficiencies, and it does occur in the U.S. Sources of iron in your food include animal products, but also protein-rich vegetables like legumes. Mm-hmm. The iron that's in plant products, it's a good idea to couple it with vitamin C so it'll be better absorbed.
Now, can vegans have a perfectly balanced vitamin intake without taking supplements?
That's an excellent question. And for most of the vitamins, that's true. There's one exception, and that's vitamin B12, which is nearly exclusively found in animal products. But again, fortified foods like a fortified soy milk, B12 fortified soy milk can be a very good source for a vegan. The other nutrient that is not a vitamin, but that is also found in animal foods in larger quantities, are the omega-3 fatty acids. And there are algal omega-3 fatty acid supplements that are vegan.
Let's take another call. This one is from Yanting in New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question regarding the vitamin K2, because I read a book was talking about, like, if you take calcium and vitamin D, although the calcium, like, absorbed to your bloodstream, and then it could clog your artery. Meantime, it could, you know, go to your bone, but this is, like, K2 will remove the calcium from the artery and put into your bone, which, you know, is supposed to be. How do you, like, explain this phenomenon, or how do you think it's true, or how much study supporting this saying?
Okay, so the question is, does K2 remove calcium from the arteries? Do we know whether that's true?
I don't know about K2. I can tell you that there is substance to the concern about excessively high intakes of calcium. And there is evidence that calcium supplements, either with or without vitamin D, can increase the risk for cardiovascular events. And also intakes of calcium above 2,000 to 2,500 milligrams a day, depending on one's age, can increase the risk for kidney stones. So like many nutrients, we need enough, but not too much. Too little will cause too deficiency. Too much can cause adverse effects.
Bob from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Throughout my, I'm 63. They've been told in various times in my life that I am deficient in vitamin B12 and now vitamin D. Years ago, I took shots of B12 on a regular basis. It did not change my B12 level. Years later, it went up, then it went down again. I'm currently told I'm deficient. And my vitamin D level, I supplemented with 1,000 to even 2,000 units a day of a liquid vitamin D. And that hasn't changed my vitamin D level. I also decided to see whether going through a summer and getting lots of sun would make a difference. It didn't. I'm apparently healthy. I'm an apparently healthy person, and so I'm curious whether there's something I could do to get better absorption of these items. I'm not a vegan. I'm not a vegetarian. You know, I eat sardines. I eat meat. So my question is: should I just forget about it, or should I be concerned and find some better way to supplement?
Well, I would encourage you to continue talking with your healthcare provider, but you raise a really important issue that I think people generally don't understand, which is that across a population, we have some people that need more of a nutrient, some people that need the average amount, and some people that probably need less than the average amount. And that's called a distribution of requirement, and that is true for almost every nutrient we have. And in fact, there's a lot of interest now in how our individual genetics may influence our need for nutrients. So there are some genes related to vitamin D that people are starting to look at, and some of the variants in those genes may actually result in lower levels of circulating vitamin D. Maybe that's normal. It's still a little bit too early to answer that question. We also have an example for folate where a variant in one of the enzymes in folate metabolism actually increases the need for folate in order to have normal function. So there's a lot of interest now in what we call nutritional individuality, and I think we're going to really learn more in the next 10 years about how our genes influence how much of a nutrient we need. So maybe that's part of what you're experiencing, but the science just isn't there yet for us to be able to tell you that for sure.
Now, we got lots of calls and we don't have much more time. I'm going to ask one of those questions. A listener wants to know, Barbara from Red Bank, whether suntan lotion affects the absorption of vitamin D.
So sunscreen, not suntan lotion, but sunscreen does in fact affect the UVB radiation from the sun reaching the skin cells to produce vitamin D.
And let me expand that also, because Shorty from Manhattan wonders if there are any cultural or dietary factors which routinely deplete certain vitamins or minerals. But go ahead.
So related to vitamin D, cultural practices with dress, cultures that cover, particularly women, you'll see very low levels of vitamin D. Of course, all of our dermatologists in the U.S. would like us not to expose a millimeter square of our skin to the sun because of the increased risk for cancer. So we really want to try to get our vitamin D from our diet, not from our skin production. Other cultural practices. An example that I might give would be the effect of tea on iron absorption. So in cultures or practices where lots of tea is being consumed, it can interfere with the absorption of iron. Those are the ones that come to mind.
And one more. Suzanne wants to know how to get vitamin D on a raw food diet, and we have about 15 seconds.
On a raw food diet.
I guess it's a problem.
Mushrooms. I would eat mushrooms that have been exposed to UVB radiation. They'll say irradiated mushrooms, and they'll have vitamin D in them.
Dr. Patsy Brennan is a professor in the Department of Human Ecology at Cornell University. She served as a member of the Institute of Medicine, Food, and Nutrition Board and the Steering Committee for the International Vitamin D Standardization Program. And I want to thank you so much for being so helpful in this discussion on Please Explain of vitamins and minerals.
Well, Leonard, it's been a pleasure to be with you and your listeners today.